Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast. I'm so happy to have you back. Today, I have an author interview with Priscilla Olivares. Priscilla is a USA Today bestselling author and 2018 RWA Rita Double finalist who writes contemporary romance with a Latin flavor. In this episode, we chat about Latinx romance, Priscilla's writing process, her book Island Affair, and of course, around the book recommendations. Now let's get to the interview. Hi, Priscilla. Welcome to the Watch Me Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Hi, everyone out there. I'm happy to be here.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, let me see. I always think short bio, long bio, just like kind of in a nutshell. I am Puerto Rican Mexican descent, a contemporary romance author. So I write with my tagline is kind of contemporary romance with a Latinx flavor. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the characters, at least one of the main characters and the families, the familias that I write about are Latinx. About me personally, I'm really close with my family, with my familia. I'm the mom of three adult daughters, but I'm really close with my siblings and with my parents. And I think that probably is kind of why I write a lot about familias, in my books. So it's a common theme, like family drama, family themes. Me personally, I'm a huge sports fan. Baseball is my number one sport. I'm a Cubs fan all the way, diehard Cubby Blue. Mm-hmm. But I'm a University of Florida alum, so go Gators, any Gator sport, we are watching and cheering on our team. So a sports fan, Zumba is my go-to fun exercise. Running is my, okay, I got to think about this next scene, or I got some thinking to do, so put on my running shoes and go. And my ultimate relaxation place, like the best place to refill any well inside of me, is the beach.
Yes. I love it.
So that's kind of, I guess also I'm trying to think of what would be another fun fact about me. Hammock naps. I'm a really good power napper. I get that from my puppy, from my dad. Mm-hmm. But the best treat for me, we have a hammock in the backyard, and there are often times where I'm writing in some location that I can see that hammock, because as soon as I've met my word count, then I'm going to get to treat myself to a nap in the hammock. So good motivation.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So I'm from Puerto Rico. So it's so amazing to see other Latina writers, especially in the women's area. Like, I seek out those experiences because there's not that many. So
no.
So your books call into me because they just represent my culture. You know, whether it's Cuban, whether it's like the different flavors, there's still something about that, especially the Caribbean experience. So.
Yes. We are a small but growing group of Latinx romance authors. A lot of us will, when we're tweeting or when we're on Instagram, we'll use the hashtag Latinx Rom, R-O-M. So if anybody out there is a social media user, you can search for that hashtag and you'll find posts that I put up, as well as, a group of us that are have started kind of supporting each other and trying to reach out to others and help each other grow, and help the number of Latinx romance authors grow. We want to see more diversity on the shelves across the board, not just Latinx rom, but diversity in general. We have actually a Facebook group called Four Chicas Chat. It's myself and three other Latinx rom authors, Mia Sosa, Sabrina Soul, and Alexis Daria. And so we kind of pop in and out there, hang out. We call it our casa, like our house, mm-hmm. and hang out there and chat. But yes, all of us, like you said, we're really hoping that we see more and more Latinx rom and more diversity, on the bookshelves.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for your work and thank you for writing it, because it is amazing to see. Like, I think I started picking up
being more conscious about looking for romance within my story this past year. And at the beginning, it was a struggle, like just to find like one author or two authors. I think I read Alexis Arias, Take the Lead. And then I ended up discovering Adriana Herrera and her books, and they were like some similar to some of the stories. And I was like, okay. And then Mia Sosa. And so it's been kind of like the hashtag has been really helpful because it just helped me discover new authors and new works that were just represented of what my experience was like, as well as my family and just like the culture that I grew up with.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear that, you know, that you searching the hashtag is helping you, you know, to identify, you know, others. Like you brought up Adriana Herrera, another great Latinx Rom author. So, yay, I'm glad you're branching out. And a lot of people have asked me, you know, why the focus kind of on Latinx Rom for me as a writer. And for me personally, that's the only, I can't speak for, you know, the others, but I write contemporary. And so I write about the world I live in, and the world I live in is diverse. You know, so to me, and like you said, I will be honest, in the first books that I wrote, did not have Latinx characters because I was doing what I tell my students. I teach an online romance writing class. And so I was, what we say is study the books that are out there so that one, you know, the market, one, you can see what works for you as a reader and what appeals to you. And so maybe like you can learn the craft that way. And so I was writing books that were like the books that I was seeing. And I could tell you that there was a lot of things that were wrong with those early books, but I do believe that it wasn't until I grew as a person, I grew as a writer, and I started listening, so I maybe gained more confidence, perhaps, that when I started writing books that featured the people, you know, that Latinx characters that, you know, that were like me, or like my sister, or like, you know, my primas, my cousins, and my amigas, you know, the girlfriends I hang out with, those books, I feel like they started to have a little bit more heart, maybe. So yes, they were better because I was learning about craft. So, but I do feel that for me, that was kind of a turning point in my writing, listening to the characters that were inside me instead of mimicking what I was only seeing on the shelves. Which is why it's important for us to see more representation on the shelves so that readers as adults, so that readers as kids see themselves and, you know, and can identify better. At the same time, I think it's important. I cannot remember who said this, so I'm sorry that I cannot attribute it to them, but that it's important for like the books we read to be both a mirror so that we see ourselves, but also a window so that you see into the lives and the worlds of others and you can learn about them and hopefully then appreciate them. And so that's what I hope if you're Latina or if you're Latinx and you read one of my books or you read Alexis or Mia or Sabrina or Adriana or, you know, anybody else's, that you feel a place of a little bit of home, like you can you see that about, you know, that part of your life. But if you're not Latinx, I hope you finish the book with, you know, at least mine, you know, that I could speak to with an appreciation, like feeling maybe you've learned a little bit more, or maybe you can identify with a little bit of that culture, you know, and feel what that you understand kind of that aspect of the characters in the book.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, I think it's so powerful. I think I love sharing my Latin books to my non-Latin friends. And you're just, you know, it's like, it's fun. Like I made believers of, you know, good friends and books around. They're like reading your book, reading Mia's book, reading Adriana's book. And being like, you know, I love this. I love the culture aspect, but there's the story. There's a part of the romance that happens in the journey.
Yeah. I mean, I've had readers ask me at like a signing or if on a panel, you know, if I'm not Latina or if I'm not Latinx, will I get your book? And my immediate answer is, it's a romance. So if you like romance, then and kind of sweeter or more sensual romance, then that's what you'll get with one of mine. Mm-hmm. The Latinx, being Latina, like with Luis in Island Affair and mm-hmm. Ana Maria, his sister, or my first series, the Match to Perfection series, was the three sisters, the three Fernandez sisters. Mm-hmm. Being Latina for the sisters was just part of who they are. But it's not the story. Just, you know, mm-hmm. like, it's like their job is part of who they are. If they have a sweet tooth, it's, you know, it's part of who they are. So, you know, that to quote the wonderful Lin-Manuel, love is love is love. And mm-hmm. So I hope you finish my book feeling like you've made new friends mm-hmm. who may or may not happen to be, you know, Latinx.
Yeah. I love it. I love that you've used culture and you've used it in a way that it doesn't feel like overpowering. It just adds some layer to the romance. It adds a layer to the story. It shows the identity of the individual, like as a full body individual, not just like, I'm just a stereotype. I think it breaks down the idea of like this individual, she, you know, is this way because of their identity. It's like, no, it's like, it's a whole picture, you know, that we get to see the character develop. And that's what I love about your book.
Well, I try, so I really appreciate you saying that. So thank you.
No problem. So what inspired you to become a writer?
Oh gosh, probably I was a reader long before I thought about writing. I, you know, grew up on, as a youngster, you know, like the Babysitter's Club and Sweet Valley High, and then I graduated on up to Harlequin, the Harlequin romance, the sweeter romance. Is actually the first Harlequin romance I read was my dad's. He let me borrow one of his. We were stuck in a hurricane shelter in the Keys and I was bored out of my mind. And he said, take one of my books, quit bugging us. But so I was long a reader before. In high school, my 11th grade English teacher, we had to write a short story. She was the first person that first kind of made me think about, you know, when she asked, you know, have you thought about English? Have you thought about writing? And so my undergrad is English with education. And, but the first time that I actually said, I want to try to write a book, mm-hmm. I was a 19-year-old young wife and new mother and college student. And we had a surprise military move. So I had to take a semester off of college by mm-hmm. the time we got to our new base. And I, you know, had gone from being a full-time student with a new baby but still juggling classes and having like my own, you know, my own activity as far as like brain activity with my classes to mm-hmm. being a stay-at-home mom for that semester. And I just thought, I just had the idea, like a lot of people, well, I have some free time and I like reading. I think I'm going to write a book. You know, it'll be easy to write a book, which you soon learn is not easy to write a book. But that's when I first started. So I was 19 and I had my oldest at that point was about 6 months old. And I wish I could say that I was like one of those people who wrote their first book and sold their first book. I kind of let that cat out of the bag earlier when I said my first books were very terrible. That did not happen to me. I did not sell my first book for 26 years. I will say within that time, it wasn't like I was knocking out a book a year. I had two more daughters and got 3 degrees and was living life and writing in and around life. I like to think about it that over those 26 years, I experienced a lot that I can infuse into the books I am selling now. But so it was a long time coming, but you know, writing in and around living life.
So I had a question. Sure. What inspired you to start writing? Was it, do you have a story in mind, or was it something you just knew that you just wanted to give it a try?
I think, well, that with, are you asking like that first book or any book?
I think any book.
Sure. Typically it's people. If you look at the books that are on my keeper shelf, other than the how-to books, obviously, mm-hmm. But the romance books that are on my keeper shelf are there because of the characters, like mm-hmm. those people have become, I think of them as friends. My ultimate book boyfriend is on there, and Cosmo Richter from Suzanne Brockman's Hot Target is mine. So if anybody out there is claiming Cosmo, I've got dibs, just so you know. But so it's the characters that draw me. And so like with the Master Perfection series, it was Yasmin just kind of came into my, you know, into my imagination, a Broadway dancer who's kind of questioning if that's really the life that she wants, but has family expectations. And then I start talking to the, you know, to her, and I discover she's got two sisters and she, you know, her papi's sick. Same way with Island Affair in the Keys to Love series, that it was stemmed from the idea of people, and the characters and my love of the island and wanting to take people, take readers back home to my adolescent home. I lived there all through junior high and high school. And then my parents lived there for many years. So I would, you know, go back to visit, you know, them and be able to go back home and visit Key West. And so I wanted to, it was a combination of that location, but mostly, you know, the characters that I, they come into my mind and I start talking to them and trying to learn a little bit more. And then, you know, becomes, I want to tell their story.
I love that idea. Cause it's one of the things that I'm curious when I talk to writers, like, was it something that you just said, you know, because it's just the fun that you have to do it, you know, you have to sit down and write and put it and push through it. But there's always like, what is a nugget? What is a seed of inspiration? Right. Was it something that you saw an idea that pop up or a character or a dialogue or something? I'm just curious.
A big question in writing, whether it's, because some people will say, well, you know what, I read an article in the paper and I saw like the situation and I thought, well, what if this instead, or what if, you know, that, right? So what if is a huge, so I will say, like with the Navarro Familia in the Keys to Love series, the new one that's starting, the Island Affair with Luis is, you know, the book one. That one stemmed from, I went to high school, my sister and I, my sister's older. We went to high school with three brothers that had two older brothers, and four of the five brothers have become firefighter paramedics in the Keys. And a lot of their, you know, other family members are. And our families were close. You know, we went to the same church, you know, so growing up. So when I've gone back to visit, we'll run into each other. And I'll say, like, Facebook helps you reconnect with a lot. And and when, you know, if you're a romance fan, you know that firefighter, a man in a uniform is also a trope that a lot of readers like to read about. Or like to hear about. And so the genesis of the Keys to Love series was my desire to set a book in my old hometown. And I think also, you know, talking with the brother that's my age, you know, in catching up and that kind of thing. And then I took that, what if? So what if they were a Cuban family? What if, I don't want all brothers because I want, you know, I wanted to have a throw a sister in there. So what if it was, you know, this, and it just kind of mushrooms from there. And then for me, the drive in the story and becomes, the character becomes like a real person to me, and, you know, and I want to tell their story well. And so that's what kind of drives me through the story, always that responsibility that I start to feel, that yikes, Ana Maria has entrusted me with her story and her feelings, and Alejandro, who's Ana Maria, that's book two. So with in book one, Luis and Sarah, they've shared their secrets with me, you know, and I'm tasked with this responsibility to tell their story, hopefully in a way that comes to life on the page, so that the readers, when they get to the end, feel like they know Luis and Sarah, maybe almost as much as I do. So
I love it. So you mentioned you had a 26-year gap between writing your first book and to getting published. What was that journey of getting your first book published?
Oh, gosh. It was a long journey. Life-wise, I think, kind of like I already said, I had two more girls, you know, just, but writing-wise, I think what really, I connected with authors and joined an organization, and I tried to maintain ties even in, you know, the years where I was homeschooling. And so, you know, we homeschooled for a few years. So mm-hmm. writing time was even more limited, and, mm-hmm. But I would still maintain ties with my writing community and write here and there when I could. I honestly believe there was a part of me that thought, you know what, if I totally disconnected and like stopped with that organization or stopped going to these meetings, even when I had only written whatever 500 words that month, if I cut that tie, I think deep inside of me, I kind of felt like, gosh, what if it like kind of fades off, you know, like a boat, you know, untie it and it's going to go out to sea and I won't get back there. So throughout those 26 years, I was still trying, you know, reading how-to books and trying to learn about the craft. And then I got my MFA, my Master mm-hmm. of Fine Arts in Writing Popular Fiction from Seton Hill University. It's mm-hmm. A small college in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, just outside of Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And that, I was working in academia as administration at that point, and I wanted my MFA just to give me something else, you know, another avenue job-wise that I could also teach at the university level or the mm-hmm. college level. But also going through that program honed craft a little bit more. It taught me to write to a deadline. And mm-hmm. so at that point, my girls were older. Mm-hmm. Two were already gone to college and off. So it was just my youngest and me at that point. So I was getting to a place where I had the time to say, okay, do I want to take this from a hobby or something that I enjoy doing to like really focus and be serious about it? And, going through Seton Hill's program helped me, professional wise, you know, writing habits to, mm-hmm. to build those, getting that call from my agent that first, you know, with that first sale from Kensington. Martin Biro was my first editor. He's no longer with Kensington. I'm with Essie Soga, whom I love as well. Mm-hmm. But talking with Martin that first time on the phone is a moment I will never forget. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely beautiful. And I will say there were a lot of times, I mean, not a lot, sorry. Let me, a lot in my mind. But there were multiple times with my last like three or so books that I came like this close where, you know, to selling. An editor would ask for revisions and then I'd get that, oh, it's not quite right. What else do you have? And people would say, oh, you're so close, but so close is still not a sale. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, but when I signed with Kensington, I got a letter in the mail, like snail mail, like not mm-hmm. even an email, but someone put a stamp on it and mailed it to me. And it was from Stephen Zacharias, the head of Kensington Publishing, who is my publisher now. And the first mm-hmm. line said, "Welcome to the Kensington family."
Mm.
And as soon as I read that, I thought, you know what? This is where I'm supposed to be. And this is why the other times it didn't work out, you know, familia is really important to me. And I felt that that was like a sign, haven't looked back. Been done a lot of writing and I've been, you know, super blessed, over the last couple years to have, you know, be able to publish the stories that I love writing.
I'm glad you are. I'm glad you found your family.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Let's talk about writing. So are you a plotter or are you a pantser? Like, do you write an outline or do you just see where the story leads you?
I am 100% like full body in the plotter, in the camp of the plotters. I have tried to be a pantser with book two of the Match to Perfection series with Rose's book, Her Perfect Affair. I thought, you know what, let's change it up. Let's just try. And for 3 months I floundered. Like 3 months, I will never get back in my life. Oh my God. I did every and anything except write, you know, every and anything except write, because I would sit down and I'd be like, I have no idea. So for me, and I will say for any writers out there, you know, fledgling writers or trying, your process is your process. Yes, it can change and it can adapt, but if you go to some presentation or you listen to some kind of podcast and you try something and it's stopping your process or your progress in your, then maybe that's not the right tool or tip or method or whatever for you. See if you could tweak it. But for me, I do a lot of character sketching. I think about the major scenes that I think need to happen along the way. For me, it's mostly a security blanket, probably, because the imposter syndrome can be so bad for me when I'm starting a book. About, you know, that maybe you don't know what you're doing. So having that basic plot outline helps me, even if while I'm going, maybe I think they're supposed to, whatever, go to the movies here. And so I have a scene, go to the movies, and this is what, you know, this is the major thing that happens that kind of pushes them forward. But as I'm writing, I realize they don't need to go to the movies. This needs to happen instead. It's even better. I throw out that scene and I write the one that has now come to me. But that having that plot outline is kind of like a security blanket that quiets the imposter syndrome, because it tells it, no, you know, she knows what she's doing, so hush up, and then I can get going.
I love it. Yeah, I think sometimes you just need to have a clear idea where you're going, just because a blank screen can be daunting. You just set it down. I'm like, what am I going to be supposed to be writing about? What am I supposed to be talking about? So having just have that as a guide, it's going to help you in the story.
I will say, I do know friends though. I have author friends that have like a nugget of, you know, this is kind of the basis of like what the goal conflict motivation is. And this is the, and they sit down and they just write, and that's their process. And the good thing for them is they figure that out and it works. So there is no right or wrong. There's plotters, there are pantsers, which for anyone out there who's not sure what that means, a pantser is like in that second category I just described, where they kind of have a germ of an idea, or, you know, maybe like a bud of an idea, and they sit down and they just fly by the seat of their pants. Then there are people that are a mix and kind of, you know, so it's, again, find your process that, you know, that helps you to be productive.
I love it. How do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of ideas, inspirations, and characters?
I am kind of semi-organized, or I like to think selectively organized, if that sounds like I know what I'm doing. I have a lot of files on my laptop. I have a notebook where I, you know, will jot down things, because there are times where I just feel like I need to have a pencil in my hand, and not a pen, a pencil, and be just thinking on paper. So in my notebook. But eventually those notes will make it into, and the files, you know, like when I'm researching, I'll just open up a Microsoft Word document and research and drop information and links in there. And then whatever is being used in my book, once I start writing, I write in Scrivener. So pictures of the characters, you know, like right now I could email you or, you know, send you or post a picture of Luis and Sarah. In my mind, if I sold the movie rights and DreamWorks or somebody, you know, Universal, whatever, somebody was gonna. In my mind, I have a Vin Diesel is Luis, little with a Latino flavor, and Sarah is Charlize Theron. So that's how. So I have their pictures. I have Ana Maria and Alejandro and Enrique, and Natalia is the heroine that will be with Enrique. And so pictures that I have, or pictures when I find the house that they're going to live in, or the car that they're going to drive, or an outfit that they're wearing, any of all of that is saved in Scrivener. But then, because I still like to have paper and pencil, when I do that plotting, I have little note cards that have a note card for each scene that has the character, the point of view character at the top, kind of the main point of what needs to happen, and then the goal, conflict, and disaster that's going to happen. And again, I'll probably have like the first 10 scenes, the note cards, but if I get to scene 7 and realize, yeah, that's not happening, or I throw it away and I write the new card for scene 7. So that by the time I get to the end of the book, I have a stack of note cards for each scene. No one's going to see those, but again, for me, it kind of reassures me. See, I have a whole book here. I know what I'm doing, I think. So I'm kind of a mix of technical, like on the laptop, and old school, you know, pencil to paper, which is kind of how I am in life in general. Like semi to non-technical, to same thing with reading. I read a lot of books on my Kindle, but there's just something about holding that book and turning the page and feeling the paper, you know, in your hands.
I love it. That was really helpful. So thank you.
Sure.
Do you share work along the way, or do you wait until it's completed for others to read?
My two main beta readers from the beginning are actually my mom and my big sister. My only sister. So, but she's older. She is, my sister Jackie is one of my, like the main brainstormer, that I will talk things out with. Also a good friend of mine, Charlie Alden. She's local writer friend here, and we'll get together, you know, off and on, and I'll bounce things off with Charlie. And, so shout out to Charlie. She's been super helpful with several books. Also, Charlie helped me brainstorm a book that I wrote for Thule. It's called Resort to Love for Thule Publishing. We brainstormed that in the car. But typically, my main is my sister, and what I will do. My mom reads for, the word just flipped out of my head, but like to make sure like my mom is caught, hey, he had blue eyes, you know, the first third of the book, and all of a sudden in this chapter he's got green, and I'm like, oh. So she'll catch that. But my mom also reads specifically to double check my Spanish. Did I put the accent in the right way? One thing that my mom has caught, and I think this is, it just shows the, you know, diversity. I grew up, you know, my mom's from Puerto Rico. And so I spent summers and everything over in Puerto Rico. My abuela would come and stay with us for long periods of time. Really during MLB, during baseball season, she was with us here. In winter, she was in Puerto Rico for the Winter Ball League. But my dad's from San Antonio, so Mexican-American, like Tex-Mex. So I grew up in those two Latinx cultures in our home. But in the Match Perfection series, the Fernandez sisters are Puerto Rican. They live up in Chicago and just outside of Chicago. So my mom noticed one of the times that there was some Spanglish, and my mom's track change note was, well, look, you can say it that way. Your cousins in San Antonio would say it that way, but in Puerto Rico, remember, we use this word instead. And both of those are words that I use regularly, you know, that I would use regularly, because in my house, we say them both. But in the Fernandez sisters' homes, they would use just the Puerto Rican one, you know. And so even within Latinx culture, you'll find differences. It's, you know, it's important then to, you know, do your research if you're writing those kind of characters. But I kind of got off topic. So my mom is one of my beta readers. My sister, what I will typically do is I will send every few weeks, send my sister what I have written already. And she gets back to, she reads it over, does track changes, will get it back to me in a few days. I'll stop writing. I'll read what she writes, you know, look over her thoughts. And then I will go back through and kind of comb over those pages that she's just critiqued. Sometimes I take, you know, sometimes I take her suggestions. Sometimes I think it over. Sometimes I don't. But so we do that back and forth. So usually by the time I get to the end of my book, I have critiqued it kind of, you know, or revised it some going through, and I've included my sister's thoughts and my mom's thoughts. And then I'll send it to my editor. And with Island Affair, I did send it to two author friends, like the first 100 pages to get feedback. And so I'm probably going to incorporate that now with Ana Maria's, because they did provide some good feedback. But in that first draft, as I'm writing the first draft, the only people that see it that would give me feedback, my mom and my sister.
I love it. I love the fact you're growing as a writer. You incorporate your family. Family is important for you. So I love it.
Yes.
So let's talk about Island of Fire.
Oh, yes.
So much of the book is about family. It's Lee's family, who are just typical men who are metal, who are just like, who love them completely, but they're just like, they're all over his life. And then,
yes.
Sarah comes in with preconceived notions about her family, how she's a black sheep, how they don't love her, and all these different things. And so much of the story is about shifting those notions and healing from the past. You know, what inspired to showcase these were two different families who, at the same time, they're, in that sense, are showing the same thing. They love their children.
What inspired me
to
do that, I think, what I wanted to try to do with this book, with this series, but with this book specifically was kind of show that, I guess, kind of like what you said, that there, even our families are different, right? One Cuban, one, Anglo from Arizona, and yet, but the families face similar types of issues, you know, siblings that, you know, are opposites, or siblings that have some kind of history that's not, you know, not so happy, but yet how do you still coexist at, you know, as a family? How can you, is it possible to find your way, you know, back to mend, you know, those bridges that are broken between you? You know, like Luis and Enrique have some really bad history, but yet they, you know, Luis talks about how he would never turn his back on his brother. And, you know, Sarah is very different from her two older siblings. Like she's, you know, almost a generation, you know, difference from them. You know, in Sarah's house, it's her parents and then her two older siblings. And then she's, you know, like, the major oops baby. And so she's felt like alone, kind of, you know, everybody was paired off. Mom and dad had each other and her sister and brother had each other. And then there was just her who, you know, thankfully she had Mama Alicia, you know, her nanny. And so I was hoping that I was able to kind of show the different dynamics that, you know, within different families, but also how we have similarities. We all face some, you know, similar experiences or similar stressors, and how what I ultimately try to do with every romance, which is what I think every romance does, is to depict how healthy relationships and when you are a healthy individual coming to a relationship and your relationship is with someone else who, you know, it healthy in the sense of good intentions, good, you know, so like your hero and heroine, Luis and Sarah are how when they come together, it helps you to get through the ups and downs in a positive way, you know. So I'm hoping that through the course of the book, we see like Luis has to grow. He has to learn to let go a little bit. Sarah, you know, has to do some changing also as far as coming into her own fully and with each other. If I've done it the right way, they learn that with the support of each other that it's easier to get there. You know, I don't ever want to say that because of that love, like it made you a better person. No, but you know, having that love helped you to become a better person, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think it just brought it fully, just added more into their life. Like, I think Sarah coming in at this point of her recovery, at this point of her career, coming to this relationship and coming to this family, just allow her to see fully the experience, to appreciate the love that was coming in from Luis. Like, to appreciate that he cared about her, not just because of what she could be a social media influencer or her eating disorder or her family being the black sheep, but he loved her just because she was healthy, that she was ready for it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I think she learned that. And then he, on the flip side, you know, he's got the big savior complex. And I think it was important for him, you know, he had to learn to let go a little bit, to mm-hmm. let, you know, to let his partner be the equal, and not feel that compulsion to step in, to save the day, to be the, which frankly weighs heavily, you know, on a person. And Sarah accepts him for his, you know, that part of his personality, but also challenges him in the sense of, you know, I don't need you to save me. I need you to be here equally fighting with me side by side. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was a big lesson for him to learn. But, you know, it was important to help him, you know, be able to be fully actualized in writing terms.
Yeah. So Sarah has an eating disorder and she's going through recovery. How much research did you conduct to get this part right?
Okay. I will say I was a little nervous to take the topic of Sarah's eating disorder, in the sense of I wanted to make sure that I did it respectfully, and, you know, and truthfully. So I did a ton of research. Probably this was in my pre-writing. So the imposter syndrome was like, you need to know everything and anything. And I probably overread, because there's so much that's not in the book. But so I did a lot of research online, and then I listened to a lot of podcasts, both podcasts for people that who, you know, had an eating disorder, and also podcasts for family members of people with eating disorders, you know, so how you, what talking about what their lives, you know, how their lives were affected, how they could help, how they should not be helped, all that kind. And then I was able to also, you know, speak with a couple people who have some experience with someone else that has an eating disorder, just, you know, to kind of ask some questions about scenes, which, you know, so I think if trying to do a combination of all of that is really the best way, because you can, you know, find out a lot on the internet, but if you can talk one-on-one with someone, listening to like real life stories from people is also super helpful as well.
Yeah, I struggled with an eating disorder like 10 years ago, and it was like, at the time, it was like so debilitating, and I lived with it for about 12 years of my life. Like, it was just like a debilitating process of like just feeling so lonely, feeling like you're not good enough, imposter syndrome, like all those different things, and it's all about control. That's what it comes down to, seat of the eating disorder. But what I appreciate about your book, it wasn't about the eating disorder. It was about the recovery, which is what I've been living for the past 12 years, is the recovery part, where you get to just deal with, like, you know, living life, until you get to, you know, figure out like what you like for food, what you don't like for food, or, you know, all these different things that you talk to your therapist. Like, I felt like you were talking my language, that it wasn't delve into the eating disorder part, which is, I've been there, done that, and I don't identify with that anymore. And that's the miracle of recovery, is that recovery has given me a life that's worth living, that's beyond food. And so I love that Sarah was able to just see that. It was like, that is not like about the food that you're gonna have. It's about, you know, the people, the love, the acceptance, all those different things that are part of the recovery. And that's what I love about this book.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm super relieved to hear that, you know, that it helped you identify, but in a positive way. I think with Sarah, I really wanted to, her, you know, the issue was her needing to control something, because she felt there was so much, you know, other stuff that she could not control, that she could not, and that, so that was a way for her to be able to, feel some, you know, but in the end, she couldn't control. It became something she couldn't control that, you know, controlled her. But you know, I hope, you know, that other readers who might be able to identify can, you know, will feel like they, I will see that I tried really hard to approach the topic with a lot of respect.
Mm-hmm. You did. So, all right. So, changing topics.
Sure.
When it comes to romance, I have to say there are certain tropes that I go for. Marriage and convenience, fake relationship, forced proximity. There's just one bet. And this book actually has fake relationship, forced proximity, and just one bed.
Yes.
So what inspired you to use this trope to get these couple together?
Well, so you started off by kind of saying my answer, and that all three of those, fake relationship, forced proximity, and there's just one bed, are popular tropes in the romance genre. So you know that there are a lot of readers that will look for that or are drawn to that. And then I will also say, I think there's like kind of like a seed, and I mention it in the scene where Luis and Sarah are first meeting when they go to Higgs Beach to kind of get their meet cute story and that where she mentions a rom-com. And so for me, it was that romantic comedy with Deborah Messing and Dermot Mulroney. I hope I said his last name correctly, called The Wedding Date, where she's going to her sister's wedding overseas and her old ex is going to be there and she doesn't want to show up all alone. So she hires somebody. Enter Dermot Mulroney, who has so many swoon-worthy lines in the movie. I love it. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of had that in the back of my mind so that's where kind of like the fake relationship I wanted to, and because I already had the idea, I knew Luis, right, and him being the big helper. So, you know, I just kind of knew if he ran into someone in need of help and there was a way for him to help him, he would say yes. And so who does he run into? A girl who has just been stood up by her loser boyfriend, and she's coming to meet a family that she, you know, feels like at odds with, and she doesn't want to show up empty-handed. And so she needs help and he can give it. And by helping her, it also allows him to avoid, you know, thinking about, you know, some issues that are going on in his life that are actually affecting work. And so it just kind of, it just was kind of like a perfect storm to like, okay, so this is what's got to happen. And then of course there just has to be one bed because it's a romance, you know, and even if nothing is ever going to happen, you know, fully in that bed, which spoiler alert does, but just, you know, even if they just sat like that the scene where I write when they're first sleeping there and she like barely touches him. I don't even want to say anything more. I will tell you that happened, and I wrote that, and then I was running off to Zumba, and my mom and dad and I, now we all live together. Mommy, Papi, and I are all together. And so my mom was reading, sitting there with her computer reading, and I left for Zumba, and I came back, and my mom was like, girl, I need them to hurry up already. So I was like, okay, yes. So that means I did that scene well, right, Mom?
So. That's amazing. Yeah, I just say I have a thing for just one bed or just one sleeping bag or snowed in or any way that it just gets to that place of forced proximity. It's just like, that's like catnip for me.
Oh my gosh, just one sleeping bag, cozy.
Yeah, there's a part of it. So just like any type of that is just catnip. Like I'm just going to auto click for me. So
nice.
Awesome. So what can we expect about Ana Maria's book? Are we getting more of Sarah and Luis, or are we getting more of Enrique? What can we expect?
Well, so I think we've already established, especially with a Latinx familia, right? Mm-hmm. Latinos, we are in each other's lives and in each other's business. Even when we would like some space, you know, my sister is going to give me her advice. And right. Mm-hmm. And so similar to my matched to perfection series with the Fernandez sisters, Lili and Yasmin and Rosa, they and their significant others are in each other's books, and because they're in each other's lives, you know, those books actually wound up happening around Christmas and Thanksgiving, and then Woolly Lee's is summer. So they're always getting together. Similar mm-hmm. here. I like to think of, I kind of pitched the Keys to Love series to Kensington a little bit as This Is Us meets Blue Bloods, but Latinx mm-hmm. style.
Okay.
And so whereas Blue Bloods, they're cops. The Navajo Familia Papi, their older brother, Carlos, Luis, Ana Maria, and Enrique, they're all firefighter paramedics. Mm-hmm. All of them, Carlos works for the county, Monroe County, but the other ones are all City of Key West Fire Department.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have, I kind of took like from Blue Bloods, if anybody's a Blue Bloods fan, you know that every show there is a family dinner. At some point, they're all going to be sitting around the table. So the Navajo Familia have their mandatory weekly Familia dinner, like, mommy, you don't miss, it doesn't matter, you don't miss. So that's something that you'll see in every book, at least one scene where they're around the Navajo, you know, family, you know, Familia dinner table. Getting in each other's business, and sometimes lovingly, sometimes, I mean, in book one, you'll see in Island Affair, Luis is, you know, Enrique and Luis are at odds for a good chunk of the book. It's part of the conflict and the self-growth that Luis has to go through that Sarah helps him with. So you'll see, you'll meet all of them in book one. In book two, which I'm finishing up right now, by the time you hear this podcast, my editor should have right now the working title. Let me not say it, because I'm not sure if I'm supposed to or not, so I don't want to get in trouble, but it's Ana Maria, and her hero is Alejandro, who you kind of hear about briefly in book one. Mm-hmm. That book is a second chance romance. They were high school sweethearts and they broke up right after high school graduation. Enrique went off. He is an adventure photographer and went off to go become all famous with photography, and Ana Maria stayed behind. You'll learn why. Mm-hmm. And Alejandro is back. He has not been back to the island for 12 years. Mm-hmm. And he is at odds with his dad. And that was part of why he left and has not come back. And so it is a second chance romance, like I said, with those two. But there are obviously, you know, there's already one Familia dinner. And so you'll see everybody again in this book. And then again, when I get to Enrique's, I think because that's how I'm not going to say all, right, because mm-hmm. nothing is all, but a lot of Latinx familias, we're at least in mine, we're always eating, we're always drinking, we're always mm-hmm. having fun, we're fighting, we're making up, we're trying to live a good life, and so that's what I try to depict in my stories as well.
Okay. So now let's go to a round of book recommendation. This is number two for you to share with the audience what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
Oh, my favorite genre is obviously romance. Within romance, I will say I tend to stick to, like, my favorite subgenre would be contemporary romance.
Okay. Who's mm-hmm. your favorite author?
Oh my gosh. It's very hard to pick one. If I had to say author, you know, when I was, you know, over the years trying to come up, probably the first one that comes to mind, if someone asked me that, it's Suzanne Brockman. Her Troubleshooter mm-hmm. series was fantastic. That's where my ultimate book boyfriend, Cosmo, who's mine, all mine, everyone, in case I didn't make that clear earlier. But that was the first series for me that I can really remember that. Years and years ago, Jude Devereaux, the Montgomerys. So yes, but at that point, it was mostly like I was a reader then. But as a writer, what I loved about Suzanne's Troubleshooter series and about series in general. So would be what I'm trying to do in mine, where beloved characters in an earlier book still come through. Mm-hmm. You know, you see them later. And for me, it's like a time to catch up with them. Like with the Fernandez mm-hmm. Familia, as an author, had to remember, okay, look, Rose's book is a year later. So Maria was 5 in this book. So she's got to be 6 now. And then Lily's is 4 years later. So what's happened? Who's had babies? Who's had, you know, and as a reader, I enjoy if I'm reading book 3 and a couple from book 1 comes in and they have a baby and I'm like, oh my gosh, yay. Mm-hmm. So I think the Suzanne's Troubleshooter series for me as a reader and a writer was the first one that really got me thinking about that. But it's so hard for me to pick like just one author. I mean, I could rattle off a couple right now, books that I know are coming out that I've had the privilege to read early arcs that I would say, go look for these. I'm not sure if you're looking for that or not.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So like Sonali Dev right now, her Pride, Prejudice and Other Flavors, she's got a series that are all retellings of Jane Austen. So mm-hmm. last year, Pride, Prejudice and Other Flavors came out. Obviously that's Pride and Prejudice, but her next one is, it will be releasing in a few months. It's called Recipe for Persuasion. And I read an earlier copy. I know when she got back her copy edits or revisions, she made some major changes. So I'm super excited to see the updated version that comes out for Recipe for Persuasion. Mia Sosa's Worst Best Man. I got an arc of that, and that just released this month in February. Super, I mean, I laughed, I cried. It's just really great rom-com. I'll say I read Ronnie Lauren's, the complete series, the 4 books of The Ones Who Got Away. Mm-hmm. And that is that, you know, I guess like trigger warning, it is about survivors from mass shooting at a high school. And now they're, you know, they're adults. I really enjoyed all 4 of those books. They're not out yet, but please look out for Farah Rashan's The Boyfriend Project and Quanah Jackson's Real Men Knit. Mm-hmm. I got lucky enough to get to read those early arcs, and all of them were like Quanah's Real Men Knit. They're the Strong Brothers. I'm like, girl, get writing because I need book 2 with that one. And Farah's is. Her heroine is an IT whiz. And in that book, I really loved the heroine feels the strong responsibility of as a Black woman in an industry that is already male dominated. So now to be, you know, a minority woman in that she prides herself and feels that responsibility of representing and doing work with the youth to, you know, so I loved her heroine and her hero. I am not tech savvy at all, but he could like just whisper tech words in my ear and I would be fine. And then later this summer, Alexis Daria's print debut, You Had Me at Hola. Which mm-hmm. is just a fabulous title. It's going to be a fabulous book. And so I'm, all of those are ones. Mia's is out now, The Recipe for Persuasion. I mean, Worst Best Man and Sonali's Pride, Prejudice, and Other Flavors. Those are all out now. The other ones are up and coming, but they're all on pre-order now. Mm-hmm. Those are ones that I've read all, but Alexis's I haven't read yet, and I would. And I guess Ronnie Lauren's are also all out now.
Yeah, I have actually most of those books in either my TBR or I already have read them. Ooh. And I have to agree with your perception because it's like they're really good books. So.
Yes.
It's a diverse read. It's not just books that are like, I think we're looking at romance who are like, romance is so wide. It's like actually these are, some of them are own voice as romance and they're great.
So. Yes. Well, Mia's the Worst Best Man, the heroine is Brazilian, and yes. So it's own voices for Mia. The for those who might not kind of be aware of like the different, you know, like the words. So for me, my Match to Perfection series, I would say it's diverse romance, it's Latinx romance, it's also own voices because the sisters are Puerto Rican and I am Puerto Rican, so I'm writing about those. I am not using own voices for the Keys to Love series. So with mm-hmm. Island Affair and mm-hmm. with book 2 and the book 3, Enrique, you know, Ana Maria and Enriquez, because they're a Cuban familia and I'm not. So yep. I have reached out to Cuban friends making sure, hey, because of the differentiations that I've noticed in Mexican and Puerto Rican culture in my home. I want to be true to that. So like Mia is Afro-Latinx, but Puerto Rican and Brazilian. So, you know, worst best man would be own voices. So yeah, there's a mix there of diverse romance and non-diverse with Ronnie's. But they're all fabulous authors, fabulous books that I would highly recommend.
Well, thank you for a book recommendation. So tell us where you can find you online.
You can find me online probably too many places. And so my you know, I have to go on Do Not Disturb when I'm writing, because social media is fun, but it can also be a time suck. But I am on Twitter and Instagram. My handles are at Pris, because Priscilla can be misspelled a bazillion ways. So Pris, P-R-I-S, Oliveras, that's Oliver, and then A-S. So at Pris Oliveras on Twitter, on Instagram. I do have an author Facebook page on Facebook, obviously. That's Pris Oliveras as well. If you are a Facebook group user, I'm on 3 author reader Facebook groups where we hang out, we chat about books, about recipes, about movies, about our families, about life in general. I am in, I've already told you, 4 Chicas Chat, and that's the number 4 Chicas Chat. I'm also one of the 12 Fiction from the Heart authors. We have a great group there. I could try to name them, but let me see if I can challenge myself. And the 12 are Jamie Beck and Liz Talley and Tracy Brogan and Sally Kilpatrick and Quana Jackson and Sonali Dev and Falguni Kathari and Hope Ramsey and, oh my goodness, and Donna Kaufman and Virginia Cantra. That's 10. That's only 10, isn't it? Oh my goodness, I shouldn't have started naming them. Did I say Barbara O'Neill?
I think so, or maybe not.
Barbara O'Neill, who I will say is her book, The Lost Recipe for Happiness, is one of my top 3 favorite books, like that I'll reread to feel inspired as a reader and an author. So Fiction from the Heart. And then you can also find me in the Racy Read Readers Room. It's a big romance group. There are probably about 30 authors in there. So there's always something going on in the Racy Reads group. And if you'd like to kind of keep up of where I'm in May and June, I'm flying all over the place. I'm going to be at the Rip Bodice. I'm going to be hopefully up at BookCon in New York. I will be at a couple of chapters in LA, and I'm having a book signing in Key West and in Coral Gables. But if you want to know all of those things, then please check out my website where you can sign up for my monthly newsletter. My website, just like my Twitter handle, is PrisOliveras.com.
I love it.
So if you know that, you'll be able to find me on most social media places. I love connecting with readers and with other authors. So please look me up and friend me or follow me, and we can keep in touch that way.
Thank you for still coming in the show.
Oh, no, I really appreciate you inviting me.
This was so much fun.
Well, it was great talking with you. Thanks, everyone.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends and share a review on iTunes. This is the best way to support the show. Once you join the Romance Loving community, make new friends, and get book recommendations, join our Patreon Romance Book Club. For $5 a month, you'll be part of a virtual book club and Instagram chat and get monthly book recommendations. Please note, I'll be donating 10% of the profit to a COVID-19 relief fund each month. To sign up, just join the link in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a few days with a brand new episode. Have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.